Living with Awareness by Sangharakshita, Windhorse Publications, 2003, read by Subhadra. Beginning. Quote from the Pali Satipatthana Sutta. Thus have I heard. On one occasion the Blessed One was living in the Kuru country at a town of the Kurus named Kama Sadama. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, namely, the four foundations of mindfulness." The term mindfulness crops up in some of the most important formulations of the Buddha's teaching. It is one of the seven factors of enlightenment. It is one of the five spiritual faculties. And it is also one of the limbs of the Noble Eightfold Path. Here, in the teaching called the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha appears to suggest that mindfulness is nothing less than the whole of the path, the, quote, direct way for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation. This is perhaps one reason why the Satipatthana Sutta is held in such high esteem in the Theravadin Buddhist tradition, which is still practiced in many parts of the world today. Many Theravadins are able to recite the entire sutta from memory. But in the Mahayana tradition also, and throughout the Buddhist world, mindfulness continues to be recognized as fundamental to spiritual growth. And it is the Satipatthana Sutta, upon which this book is based, that gives us the clearest and most detailed account of why this should be so. The teaching was given, so we are told in its opening words, among the Kuru people, who lived at the time of the Buddha, around 500 BCE, somewhere in the area of what is now Delhi, in northwestern India. We are given no other clues as to the circumstances in which the discourse was given, but we can guess, going on accounts of similar occasions in the Pali texts, that the Buddha was probably staying among a small group of bhikkhus, or itinerant monks, who were dwelling in little huts dotted about somebody's park or garden, or simply living under the trees. In some texts, we find the Buddha instructing his companion Ananda to gather all the bhikkhus together so that he can address them. Presumably, this would have happened when there were a number of them living over a large area. But if there were only a few of them around, the Buddha would probably have called them together himself. And this seems to have been what happened upon this occasion, perhaps once the bhikkhus had returned from their alms round in the nearby town of Kama Sadama. The Buddha often taught in response to a question put by Ananda or one of the other disciples, or by someone else he happened to meet. Sometimes a lay person or a follower of another teacher would seek him out to ask him a question or try to catch him out on a point of logic. In some cases, the question had to be asked not once, but three times. Apparently, the Buddha would always answer a question on the third time of asking, whatever the consequences for the questioner. But here he seems to call the monks together himself, with the intention of giving them what we can infer he considers to be a very important teaching. The, quote, direct way, as he tells them, for the purification of beings. This sense of a unified way is emphasized throughout the Buddha's teaching. It is what the path is in principle, as distinct from all the different presentations of it. The Dharma finds expression in many formulations. There is the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth of the Four Noble Truths, and the threefold path of morality, meditation, and wisdom. While in the Mahayana tradition, the the path of the Bodhisattva is central, with its vow to liberate all beings and its training in the 6 or 10 perfections. One can't say that any one presentation of the doctrine or any one method is the best under all circumstances and for all people. But for all the diversity of these presentations of the Buddhist path, each in its own way embodies the same spiritual principles. Of course, there is a view of spiritual development that goes further than this, to regard all the world's religious teachings as equally valid paths to the goal, holding that, just as all roads lead to Rome, the truth to which all spiritual paths lead is the same truth, expressed in different ways. Perhaps the image of the path is misleading. Although many of the world's religious teachings use it, they are not necessarily using it to describe the same thing. One obvious difference is that, unlike Christianity, Islam, and even Hindu Vedic philosophy, Buddhism teaches that the highest being in the universe is not a god, but an enlightened human being, and that the state of enlightenment, which is the goal of Buddhist practice, is attainable through one's own efforts to transform one's consciousness. This transformation is made possible by the principle which, as the Buddha states throughout the Pali Canon, is the essence of the path, the principle of conditionality, the truth that whatever exists owes its arising to causes and conditions, that is, things change, we change, and we have the capacity to direct that change towards spiritual growth and development. This is the guiding principle of the Buddhist path. It is the means by which our consciousness is transformed, transcended, enlightened. The Buddhist outlook is profoundly optimistic. The greed, aversion, and delusion of the unenlightened mind are universal problems, but human consciousness, wherever it arises, also shares the same spiritual potential. From a Buddhist perspective, any religious teaching can be said to lead towards enlightenment to the extent that it enables and encourages the individual to develop spiritual qualities. And if it leaves some qualities out, or encourages the development of qualities that are inimical to spiritual growth, examples of this readily come to mind, of course, it cannot be regarded as an expression of the path at all, and this must be acknowledged if real growth is to be possible. From this, we can work out a basic definition of mindfulness. The, quote, direct way for the purification of beings, unquote, is the sum total of the ethical and spiritual qualities that a human being must develop in order to reach what Buddhists call enlightenment. But mindfulness is more than just a mixture of all these aspects of the path. It is a distinct spiritual faculty, the defining quality of all Buddhist practice. And according to the words attributed to the Buddha in the Satipatthana Sutta, one learns to practice it by attending to 4 basic aspects or foundations of mindfulness. The Sutta. What are the 4? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put aside covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. The term satipatthana combines mindfulness, or sati, with building up or making firm, patthana, And as its name suggests, the concern of the Satipatthana Sutta is the development of a continuity of mindful positivity across the whole field of human consciousness. To give us a more specific idea of what this means, the sutta classifies this mindfulness according to what are called the four foundations of mindfulness. In Pali, the ancient Indian language in which this teaching was first written down, these are mindfulness of rupa or form, usually taken to mean one's own physical body, mindfulness of vedana or feelings, mindfulness of citta, which in this context means thoughts, and mindfulness of dhammas, dhammas being in this context the objects of the mind's attention. By establishing these four foundations, one cultivates the conditions for the arising of ever more positive and refined states of consciousness. The same word for this establishing appears in its Sanskrit form in the establishment aspect of the relative bodhicitta, the prasthana citta of the Mahayana schools. Alongside the bodhisattva vow, this involves the cultivation of the 6 or 10 perfections in a practice which, like that of the four foundations of mindfulness, progressively harmonizes its different aspects into an increasingly dedicated commitment to the path.
While the word foundation gives a good sense of the mental stability developed through practicing this teaching, we are not to imagine anything static. These foundations are not to be laid down like blocks of granite, like the motifs of a symphony or the basic steps of a ballet. They are the essence of continuous dynamic development. Mindfulness harmonizes and unifies every aspect of Buddhist practice into a concentrated, responsive awareness of body, feelings, mind, and mental objects. Perhaps the most apt analogy, again from the arts, is to say that being truly mindful is like playing a musical instrument, with oneself as both instrument and player. A violinist doesn't give a bit of attention to the score, then a bit of attention to her fingers on the strings, then a bit of attention to the conductor. To play well, she has to bring about a fusion between herself and what she is doing, a fusion almost between her awareness and its object. Everything must come together in a single rich experience of energy and expressive skill. She is fully absorbed, yet at the same time keenly aware of every movement she makes. This heightened state of awareness is what we need to aim for. Body and mind fully engaged in a state of clarity and positivity that saturates and colours the whole of our experience. And this is surely a state much to be desired, not a duty, but a great pleasure. This is the aim, everything coming together in a smooth flow. But just as the violinist needs to work on the details of her technique to achieve the full effect, so we need to pay careful attention to the details of our mindfulness practice, that is, to each of the four foundations, and to further details within each of the four. The Buddha therefore proceeds to elaborate on each foundation in turn, to make the nature of the practice clear. This detailed and specific approach helps to counteract the tendency to overgeneralize the nature of spiritual development. It is sometimes said that the aim of Buddhist practice is to attain insight into the true nature of things, and that is fair enough, in a way. But the nature of that insight is not a general, abstract understanding, and it will not come about by chance. A great deal of preparation is needed. First, to clarify one's consciousness, and then to develop a state of receptivity into which the essential truths of the Buddha's teaching can be introduced. And according to tradition, much of this preparation is best done through the vigorous and creative practice of meditation. It has become a commonplace of contemporary Buddhist teaching that we can learn to be mindful while eating, doing the washing up, and so on. And we certainly can, indeed must. We can be mindful, that is, we can be preparing ourselves for the attainment of insight in all the circumstances of our lives. And the Satipatthana Sutta takes full account of this, as we shall see. At the same time, as so often in the Pali Canon, the emphasis is placed on the practice of meditation as the basis of the whole process. What kind of meditation? In the Buddhist tradition, meditation practices are generally classified as being of two kinds: shamatha, or calming, and vipassana, or insight. Through shamatha meditation, one develops mindfulness of the body and an ardent, energetic one-pointedness of mind, building up an intensity and subtlety of concentration, on the basis of which a deeper, more far-reaching understanding can be developed. At this point, you broaden the scope of your concentration by introducing some method of insight meditation, designed to help you to experience the truths of the Buddha's teaching, not just as religious or philosophical ideas, but as tangible realities. As we shall see, the distinction between these two kinds of meditation is not as clear-cut as it is sometimes thought to be. The mindfulness of breathing, for example, is far more than a simple concentration technique, and the Satipatthana Sutta encompasses both types of practice. All this will be the stuff of this commentary. But before we home in on the details, we will be working through the text a section at a time. In the next two chapters, we will consider two aspects of mindfulness that are pertinent to all aspects of its practice: memory and mindfulness of purpose.